This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme, from serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
And a good Monday afternoon, everybody. Hello.
Woo.
Oh.
You need a weekend from your weekend?
Boy, I do. I'll tell you what. We went walking yesterday.
Oh, wow. That's exhausting.
Everyone went walking yesterday. Mm-hmm. I said it was, I think the day before yesterday, it was 33 degrees out with a feels like temperature of 96.
I loved that Facebook post because it hit home for me. I took the dog out for a walk and I was out for about 45 minutes. And granted, it was colder than I wanted it to be, but oh, was it nice.
I don't even need a jacket. I might put a swimsuit on. It was 33 and it felt, you know, just with the sun and no wind. And I think if we're honest, we all need some vitamin D right now. You know, it's just, it's been a long fourth winter and I'm ready to go bye-bye.
The next 9 days look great.
Good.
Until the cold comes back.
Well, you know, by the time, if you can just get me to March, I say this every year, when the cold comes back, if it comes back late in the year, it's like a one and done. I can get through one day. I just can't do 10 in a row.
We laying odds if it's going to snow in April or May this year?
Don't you dare speak that into existence, Dan Weinbaum.
Prince had a song called Sometimes It Snows in April.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Huh.
It does sometimes snow in April.
It's very rare, and I don't want to talk about it. How was Sebastian Maniscalco? We were not able to make that work over the weekend. Sam, did you go?
I did. It was awesome. He is hilarious. And I'm kind of a curmudgeon when it comes to comedy. I love comedy. So I'm not, I don't poo-poo comedy. But I'm not going to sit there and give you a cheap laugh. I'm going to sit there and try not to laugh.
Oh, you're that guy.
And you
guy.
Have to make me laugh.
Why?
You know, I'm there to see a performance. I'm not just going to laugh because I'm at a comedy show and that's what you're supposed to do. I mean, there were some jokes that he dropped that were, I mean, they were funny. They were mid-level. And I heard belly laugh, a Dana Wright belly laugh all around me.
Well, how long did he do? How long is his set now?
Well, so he went an hour and 15 minutes, which is about 30 minutes longer than the normal comedy set. There were a couple of lulls in there. He did a little bit of crowd work.
That's all right.
Which I think was just kind of his way of breaking up some of his planned stuff. But overall, I belly laughed probably 15, 20 times, even though I was trying not to laugh.
That's good.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you got to go.
It was a good time. His opener was pretty good, too. Kind of cold to start, but really got his stride.
Just one opener?
Just one opener. It's his co-host.
And I have to ask, because again, I wasn't able to, I've seen him twice. He is so funny. He somehow does all of this clean. And if
he is not clean.
Okay, he's not. He started out pretty clean.
I thought that he was clean, and for about the first 15 minutes, I was like, oh, yeah, he's keeping the clean thing going. His opener was not clean.
Wow.
And after about minute number 16, the clean went out the window. There was
really?
A lot of jokes about downstairs.
Okay. So my question is, when you go see a comic at an arena, I mean, this was at T-Mobile. Are there enough monitors that if you're in the nosebleeds, you can still follow along what's going on?
So the upper bowl wasn't open. It was just the lower bowl.
Good.
And then, yeah, just like if they were to have, you know, the Big 12 tournament there, they had the giant screens up above him. So
I'm telling you, Kansas City, we are getting almost all of the comedy shows. And if you have never been a consumer of live comedy, put it on your list. I saw today Josh Johnson, one of my favorite comics. He is a brilliant observationalist, and he has just
he's clean too.
He has just added Kansas City to his stop.
Where?
The Midland,
I believe.
Huh.
So
I will say with Maniscalco, I've seen a lot of his older stuff. He didn't recycle a single bit.
Good.
Well, that's why Josh Johnson is so popular. He watches the news, and then every week, you know, he's exploded on YouTube. He has a YouTube channel. He has new commentary on real world, what is going on, like with the people in the plane upside down. And it is brilliantly done.
Well, like when Luigi Mangione, when that all went down, he had some jokes about that the next day. Too soon? Maybe.
After Diddy's house was raided, we've talked about the Diddy scandal and all the accusations coming out against him. Yeah. After that raid went down, he did an entire show, start to finish, about people that hate Diddy.
It's funny. Check him out. If you haven't seen Sebastian, check out Josh Johnson. My God, I love him. And we tried to get him on the show, and Sam got a two-word response from his publicist.
No.
One short word, one long word.
Yeah.
Not available.
Not available. Like,
really?
He's so busy, they couldn't even throw in a subject or a verb. Not available.
Is that really what they said?
Oh, I sent a very long, flowery thing about how hilarious he is.
How much we love him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. How Dana's obsessed with him.
I'm going to take another crack at it, Sam.
Oh, my.
Not available.
I'm going
if
to
you
go,
get it
I'm
and
going,
I got a not available, I'm going to be I'm going to be more upset than just getting the not available.
I'm going to try to go around traditional sources and bring him onto the program because I just think he's just so dang smart. And his brain works like a lot of these creative types that I'm obsessed with on a different level in a different way.
Not available?
Not available. Available.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, at least with Dr. Rick, we can't find him.
Yeah.
Yeah, at least don't respond, you know?
Why would you even respond? That's a great point. If he's not available, just ignore us.
Now, it could be something with the way that Josh does his comedy. You know, when you are able to come up with jokes that quickly, your brain is pretty...
He's got to be exhausted.
It's out there.
He's got to be exhausted.
And so maybe there's a situation where he just doesn't do radio interviews because he has to be clean and he's afraid that he's going to violate the trust of the FCC.
All right.
Well, Who knows? We have an 8-second dump.
Yeah.
I like the 8-second dump. You want to rephrase that, Scott?
Go about your business.
I'm going to go to the bathroom here in
a
minute.
We have an 8-second dump.
Saving that
one.
You
made it sound so exciting.
Take an 8-second dump.
Was it a one wig or two wig?
Oh, it's going to be a 9-wig boom
boom.
Whoa,
in 8 seconds?
Uh-huh.
I'm worried about you.
May have time for two.
Oh, my goodness.
You are driving me crazy today.
Am I?
Yes.
It's just Monday. And Dan, you do make noises when you eat. I'm just going to be honest. We've talked about this before.
And when you drink your coffee.
On a Monday, you should not be allowed to eat in the newsroom or drink anything around us.
Okay.
Just on Monday.
Oh, he got to use his toboggan over the weekend. Somebody got hurt.
Do tell, Dan.
Well, yeah, on Saturday, I was on ski patrol all weekend up at Snow Creek. And there was a middle-aged boy, tough kid, who got injured and he needed transport down. Mm-hmm. And so I showed up with my toboggan. I asked him, do you like to go fast? And he said, yeah. I said, okay, we're going to go fast.
Hang on.
So
ask him how fast they went.
Well,
how fast did you go?
One go on a toboggan? I don't know if this is, is this a trick question?
No. My top speed for that ride was 26 miles per hour.
Wow. Okay, that's a lot.
That was pretty fast.
We don't need you flying off the toboggan, getting injured, coming off the toboggan to help somebody. And by the way, I know we kid because we love, but there was a ski patroller this week that made me think of you, Dan, because God bless her. She was up there helping somebody, and there was an avalanche last week on Mammoth Mountain Resort. She passed away over the weekend of those injuries.
Yeah. Avalanches are no joke. Yeah.
Where's Mammoth Mountain?
It's out in California.
Okay.
My God. I saw that and I thought, you know what? We tease because we love, but, you know, you get caught out there and something goes south, you are praying for Dan in that toboggan.
Well, I don't think there's any real threat of a avalanche at Snow Creek.
Well,
no,
but people
not here.
Get
not
injured, here Scott. They get head injuries. They get, you know, all kinds of stuff happen.
All right, 913-586-7798. Sam Stevie III. She is Dana Wright. My name is Scott Parks here on KMBZ. Story here from the from Channel 5. A bizarre situation from a hotel room has one family warning others. This is based out of Overland Park. Trisha Nowak stayed in the Hilton Garden Inn with her daughter and her friend for a volleyball tournament. They're from Vegas originally. On Sunday, February 16th at midnight, so a week ago yesterday, Nowak said she got a call about fentanyl exposure in the hallway of the hotel. It all turned out to be false. Quote, I was woken up from a sound sleep and the person said there was an emergency. Go put a rag under the door and I'll explain what's going on, said Nowak. Nowak said that the man claimed to be working the front desk and gave her a list of things to get up and do. Anytime I questioned him, asking him if this is really happening, like what's going on, he just kept hurrying me. Things quickly escalated when she said the caller told her she needed to get fresh air into the room. Then he instructed me to go to the toilet tank top and break the window, which I did.
She broke the hotel window.
Nowak said it took her a couple of times to break the window, and when she finally did, she said the caller was shocked that she had done that. She then became suspicious, calling the front desk and ultimately the police. I wanted the police to come and make sure that the girls are safe. Overland Park showed up. Police, they did not find any fentanyl. They say it was a prank.
Okay. Help. I read this story over the weekend. Help me understand why this isn't, I'm going to lie to you to get me to give you my bank information. This isn't, is your refrigerator running?
Better go catch it.
Would be the point? This wasn't a kid on the other end of the line. She said it sounded like a grown man.
Yep.
What would be the point of telling someone from out of state? She has no known connections here in Kansas City. Why do this to anyone in a hotel room?
Well, you would have to know that the phone number that you're calling is a hotel room.
Okay.
First and foremost. By the way, she was billed for the broken window.
Oh, no, she was not.
$500.
She did break the window.
She did.
For no legitimate reason.
Well, there was somebody on the other end of the line saying they were at the front desk.
Okay, so her husband, Oliver, looked this up. Never thought I should Google this, but we can. Feeling helpless thousands of miles away, he Googled what had happened to her and found several reported instances around the country where this has happened.
I'm looking at it right now.
She says it's crazy and embarrassing, but at the same time, he was just convincing enough, especially when I'm half asleep. Why would someone do this? And then, my God, she got charged, Scott. She'll never come back to Kansas City again, nor would I.
$500. That's right. Why would somebody do it? If it was a teenager, I could almost semi-understand it. You're bored. You're trying to have a little fun at somebody else's expense. You know, kind of like when we were kids, is your refrigerator running? Well, you better go catch it. But this is a grown man, or so it sounds.
Yes.
So what's in it for him? What's the point? It's the middle of the night, clearly. She says she was sleeping. Why would you prank a number that you know is a hotel room? Were you a former employee?
How do you get the direct line of a specific room?
Okay.
I don't know.
Look up PrankNet. PrankNet is a network of online, quote, terrorists. Now, this is their word. I don't like that word. Who perform crank calls, which cause thousands of dollars worth of damages. The cruel prank phone calls created anxiety and fear for anyone who picked up the phone. PrankNet victims destroy hotel rooms, set off fire alarms, and flood rooms by damaging the sprinkler system.
Founded by a man who went by the name Dex One by One, later identified as a Canadian named Tariq Malik. They were most active between 2009 and 2011.
Now, if this is the same network, by the way, and we don't know that it is, but when you Google this, this is what pops up. This is the same network then that is responsible for getting those two female KFC employees. Remember this a couple years ago? To strip naked. You not remember that?
No,
they were at work and it I don't even remember what the ruse was, but the two workers went back into the, you know, back employee area and did as they were told.
Great question on the text line. How did the caller know that the bathroom had a window? Most hotel bathrooms do not.
I don't know how to ask this question without victim blaming, and this is not the intent of my question. Are we unaware how fentanyl works?
I think most people are.
I think, though,
it's
Sam,
not a gas.
If you are a chaperone of a bunch of young girls and there's this frantic phone call that comes in at midnight and you're asleep and they're like, we need you to get up right now and do this, most people are going to get up and do what you're told. You know, he first told her, cover the door underneath the door. Okay.
I've got to be honest. If I'm asleep in a hotel room and the phone rings in the middle of the night, I am picking the phone up and putting it back on the receiver.
Why?
Because they're not trying to call me. And if there's a fire, the fire alarm's going
to
go off.
Wouldn't you think it was somebody from your family who was trying to get in touch with you because there's clearly bad news? I get you're going to say they would call my cell.
I was just about to say my cell phone's plugged in on the nightstand.
Hmm.
And my family knows if it's an emergency, call twice.
But no, to answer your original question, I don't think most Americans know anything about fentanyl other than it's very deadly.
I mean, if somebody said to me there's a fentanyl exposure in the hallway, I would have laughed and said that doesn't even make any sense. But again, we've done a lot of stories on fentanyl, so I'm well aware of how it works.
But I think what most Americans know, two things about fentanyl. It's very deadly, to Dana's point, and you can get it
secondary exposure just
by touching it.
Yeah.
That's what I think Americans know. But how did they know that the bathroom had a window?
Well, they might have said to her, is there a bathroom in the window? And she goes, yeah. Okay, we're going to need you to go in and break that window. Now, at that point, would most people go, all right, wait a minute. Why am I breaking a window?
Because there's a fentanyl exposure in the hallway. And if he said, the caller said, I need you to break the window in the bathroom, that would add some credibility to the fact that he's calling from the front desk. How would he have known that there's a window in the bathroom? He must be calling from the front desk.
Yeah.
I'm with Sam. I would hang up the hotel phone. Or they say I disconnect the hotel room phone when I get to the room. Okay. Suit yourself.
I don't know. It stinks that they charged her for it, but again, she
$500.
What are you going to say? I didn't mean to break the window.
Does the hotel not have insurance for something like that?
Well, yeah, but they have insurance for anything else you might break.
Mischief.
But you don't want to make a claim on your insurance when you can get the tenant to pay for it. Because every time you make a claim on your insurance rates go up.
And she's worried for her daughter and her daughter's teammates. And I can understand the frantic nature behind it, but I don't know how it gets to this point.
Somebody says, how about just open the window? Most hotel windows just open.
Do they?
It's been a long time since I've been in a hotel with a window.
I've been in hotels that had like the little sliver of window that opens. Like here, you get 4 inches of fresh air.
Yeah. Right.
Because they don't want you going out on the balcony for any, you know, they don't want you. Yes, correct. They don't want you doing that. When we get back, I don't know if we're going to make this a topic or not, but Clint Hill. If you are my age or older, that name is going to sound familiar. And when I tell you who he is, you will know exactly who he is. Clint Hill, the Secret Service agent who jumped on the back of JFK's limousine in Dallas on that horrible day in 1963, has died at the age of 93.
Didn't he live here in town?
Does he have some Kansas City connection? I want to say that he did. I know there are other Secret Service agents over the years that did. I don't know that he did. We'll look that up during a break.
Okay.
But Clint Hill has died at the age of 93. And spoke during his life about the deep regret, Scott, he had, the deep guilt he had as a Secret Service agent for not taking the fatal shot instead of the president, telling 60 Minutes once, quote, I will live with that to my grave.
He died in California 3 days ago.
Oh, man.
913-586-7798, 586-7798, here on Dana and Parks.
So we'd have to look and see if any of the other active Secret Service members are still living. But the main Secret Service guy who infamously leapt onto the back of the limousine after the president was shot was forced to retire early because he remained haunted by the memories of that day, has died. Clint Hill was 93 years old, died Friday at his home in Belvedere, California, according to his publisher. This says, although few may recognize his name, the footage of Hill captured on the Zapruder film during the assassination provided some of the most indelible images of Kennedy's assassination in Dallas on November 22nd, 1963. He received Secret Service awards. He was promoted for his actions that day, but for decades blamed himself for Kennedy's death, saying he did not, quote, react quickly enough, and said he would have gladly given his life to save the president. He said famously in a 60 Minutes interview with Mike Wallace, if we have some of it, Sam.
Was there any way, was there anything that the Secret Service or that Clint Hill could have done to keep that from happening?
Clint Hill, yes.
Clint Hill, yes? What do you mean?
If he had reacted about 5/10 of a second faster, or maybe a second faster, I wouldn't be here today.
You mean you would have gotten there and you would have taken the shot?
The third shot, yes, sir.
That is Clint.
By the way, on that day, he was not assigned to protect the president. He was assigned to Jacqueline. He was riding on the left running board of the follow-up car directly behind the presidential limousine as it made its way through Dealey Plaza. So remember, there was a car behind the president's car. Mm-hmm. Clint Hill was the one behind that car on the running board. He jumped off, ran toward the president's car as it tried to speed away, and was seen tragically trying to get Jackie back into the car because she came off to the trunk to retrieve
his brain
remains.
Yeah.
And Clint Hill, I thought, heroically jumped off that car and then went up to the president's car. Before his death, they said he had come to accept what had happened that day. I don't know what he could have done.
I don't either.
5/10 of a second sooner.
You have to remember the first shot went through JFK's lower neck. And that's the magic bullet.
Hit his wrist, hit his leg.
Yeah, that also hit Governor Connally.
Hit Governor Connally.
And it was the second or third shot that hit him in the head. By the way, Clint Hill retired at the age of 43. You'd mentioned this just a moment ago, that he retired early. He retired way early. At the age of 43, at the urging of his doctor, who said that he physically, mentally could not handle any longer the guilt that he had from the JFK assassination.
That interview was 12 years after the fact. You heard the long pause before he answered the question. He is staring down, and there is literally nothing behind his eyeballs. He has the thousand-yard stare.
Yeah, that interview you just played was conducted 40 years ago this year.
In his 2005 memoir, Between You and Me,
check that 50.
Mike Wallace recalled that interview with Hill as one of the most moving of his career. In 2006, Wallace and Hill reunited on CNN's Larry King Live, where Hill credited his first 60 Minutes interview with finally helping him to start the healing process. Keep in mind, that interview was in the early 2000s.
I certainly applaud his bravery, his willingness, but I don't know that he should have any guilt. If you watch the film, it's literally seconds.
Well, it's not even seconds. It's fractions of seconds.
But from the time that he takes the bullet in the neck, you know, and famously you see him cupping his throat, the president. And then, 2 seconds later, he takes the fatal shot to the head?
If that. Private funeral service will be held in Washington, D.C. on a future date. did anything ever come out of the we are going to redact some of those files and release them?
Other than they have not been released? No. They have not been released yet.
I believe they have like 45 or 90 days to go through the files, which just unredact. I don't know what you're going through, but before they release them.
There are 5 million pages of records.
God.
5 million pages of records related to the Kennedy assassination. They would have to go through every single one. They just found 2,400 new records last month related to the assassination. Where do these records hide out?
They're literally in boxes.
I was going to say, or in caves like we have around here.
Yeah.
You know?
There once was, and I read his book years ago back in the 90s. There was one of the Secret Service agents from the Kennedy detail who lived in Overland Park. And I don't remember if that was Clint Hill. I couldn't find anything linking him to Overland Park.
This says Hill is not directly associated with Kansas City, but is married to Lisa McCubbin Hill, a New York Times bestselling author who is based in Kansas City. Whatever that means.
913-586-7798. Ben in Leawood. Ben, hello.
Hey, how's everybody doing today?
We're doing well. Thank you.
Beautiful day out here today. Hey, you know, Scott, he did a long, long interview with Johnny Dare a long time ago.
Oh, wow.
And I bought his book. He did a book signing, I think, Rainy Day Books or something.
Sure.
But it's the picture of the guy on the trunk of the car reaching out to Jackie. That's him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was just, you know, I could have sat and listened to that guy for hours. And Johnny's played that back a couple of different times.
Oh, we'll have to ask him about that.
It's a moving interview.
Ben, how was the book? I mean, that has to be from a first person.
The book was excellent. It was one of those, like you would say, you pick it up, you don't put it down until you're done.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. Excellent. But yeah, I still remember that interview to this very day. What a great guy. And it's a shame that he has now passed away. But yeah, he talked about that day like that was the darkest day of his life.
It probably was.
He has also authored Mrs. Kennedy and Me, because he was her detail, remember?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
5 Presidents. 5 Days in November. I have that book. I have 5 Days in November. And My Travels with Mrs. Kennedy.
Telephone number here is 913-586-7798. Somebody says the Kennedy car was on display at the Henry Ford Museum. It's definitely worth checking out. Why would it be at the Henry Ford Museum? Jerry in North Kansas City. Jerry, good afternoon. Hello.
Hey, it's Jerry. But hey, I don't know if y'all have ever heard of the book Hollywood Godfather. It's an autobiography of a guy named Gianni Russo, who is an actor and also kind of an associate of organized crime. And he claims in the book that he had a meeting with somebody in Texas like the day before or 2 days before the assassination, and that Lee Harvey Oswald was in that building. That he saw him in the building. It's an amazing book. I don't know how verifiable all of it is, but if you like a great book to read, it's really amazing. But yeah, he ties organized crime to the assassination.
Jerry, thank you for the call. The 1961 Lincoln Continental limousine that was used in the assassination of President John F. Kennedy is on display at the Henry Ford Museum in Dearborn. It has been there since 1978. The car was impounded after the assassination and modified in Cincinnati. It was then used by other presidents, right? Including,
I would not be writing in that,
Lyndon B. Johnson, Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, and Jimmy Carter. It was returned to Ford in 1977 and then donated to the museum. It is one of the more popular items at the museum.
By the way, Clint Hill would have been 31 when JFK was assassinated. Ron in Lenexa, you get the last word. Hello, Ron.
Hey, Scott. Hey, I'm going to just add real quick to your history here. I did not know Mr. Hill, but in late 80s, I was in Hot Springs, Arkansas, and I met a gentleman by the name of Nick McDonald. And the gentleman I was with knew Nick, and he said, "Ron, this is our resident celebrity here in town," and I didn't know who he was. Mm-hmm. Finally, I said, "Nick, what's your claim to fame?" "Well, I was a policeman in Dallas, Texas." I said, "Oh." And so my friend said, "Well, he arrested Lee Harvey Oswald." I said, "You're kidding." So he proceeded. I proceeded to ask him some questions, and he was reserved and didn't really want to talk. But after a few minutes, he opened up and he told me, and I won't bore you with the long story, but he told me the entire story of how he arrested him and the sequence of events and how the day proceeded, et cetera, et cetera. He went on to became him and his wife were sent out to help back in those days to Prairie. I forget the name of the small town, but to help Mrs. Oswald. And I said, "Wow, that's incredible." He went on to become a surrogate uncle to Oswald's daughters and gave them both away in their weddings. And I said, "Well, do you still talk to her?" "Oh, I talked to her yesterday." This was in the late 80s.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, it was incredible. It was incredible. I journaled it to make sure I captured it all. But at the end of the conversation, I said, and this is when all the conspiracy theories started to evolve in the 80s, et cetera. Yep. I said, "Well, Nick, so who do you think did it?" And he did not hesitate. He said, "Oh, there's no doubt Oswald did it." And I was taken back with all the, I said, "Really?" So he left, Nick left, and I asked my friend who knew him quite well, I said, I can't believe he said that." He goes, "Ron, I'm going to tell you, you got the interview of a lifetime. So, news media come in here all the time to interview him, and he won't give any interviews. But once he realized you were not writing anything down and nothing was being recorded, he shared all that with you." There you go. That was it.
I'll be darned.
So it was an incredible story. Anyway.
Hey, thank you for sharing, Ron. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I knew there was another Kansas City connection, and it's bizarre, but I'm throwing this out because I could not remember whose name it was. Then Kansas University football coach David Beatty. Coach Beatty. Mm-hmm. His dad is one of the men pictured in the photo of the death of Lee Harvey. Yes.
Which one? Do you know?
Of Lee Harvey Oswald. This one right here, I think. Somehow someone called in at some point during this show and said, "Did you know the KU football coach's dad is in that photo?" It was like one of the lawmen that day. Remember, he was surrounded by cops and then Jack Ruby.
How did that even happen? You have the alleged assassin of a U.S. president just walking down a hallway.
They also paraded the rifle with fingerprints and everything. Just paraded it through the, look at what we got here. I mean, he was a trophy.
How's Jack Ruby in there?
I know.
913-586-7798, 586-7798, here on Dana and Parks. You want to say that out loud?
No.
Under her breath, she's apparently looking at the latest men's basketball rankings. And under her breath, she goes, "Well, KU is not ranked in the top 25 in, well, the entire history of the top 25.
Ranked.
Had a good game over the weekend against Oklahoma State. They did very well.
Mm-hmm. Last win of the season. Go team. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Went to Manhattan yesterday, by the way. Put on my.
They let you in?
They did.
Because KU was unranked.
I think they fell yesterday too, didn't they? Anyway, it was lovely. I enjoy that drive through the Flint Hills. It is quiet. It is beautiful. It was a lovely time. Had some lunch. Took the baby shopping. Did a little Walmart run.
You went through the Flint Hills to get to Manhattan?
Well, you know the hills that you have to go through to get there. They're hills.
Well, they are.
Very hilly.
Very.
A lot of cows.
Where did we dine?
Very quiet. We dined in Aggieville. And the reason I mentioned the game, I just had not realized they were playing yesterday at 3. So we just bopped down there like, "Oh, let's go have lunch." Oh, my gosh.
Was it a home game?
It was packed, yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. It was super fun, though. We had a really, really good time.
Well, I'm glad. Pope Francis is not doing well.
I saw that over the weekend, too.
Yeah. He remains in the hospital in Rome, initially because of bronchitis, I believe it was. Now they're saying he is in the early stages of kidney failure. And Cardinal Timothy Dolan from New York said yesterday, the Catholic faithful are united at the bedside of a dying father. Mm. So I don't know what to read into that other than it doesn't look good. May God bless him, though. 88 years old. He is on a high flow of oxygen at the moment. And blood test showed initial kidney failure.
Certainly needs a prayer right now.
Doctors say that the kidney failure is under control. And he remains in critical condition. He's been the Pope since 2014. Totally unrelated, Hooters.
Nice transition. All right.
Let's see, of all the things in the stack, mentioning the Pope's organ failure, I'm going to go with Hooters.
I put these two stories on my keyboard, and I thought, how are we going to make that transition there, Scott?
Are you sure you thought?
Wow.
I said, are you sure you thought?
I probably didn't think very hard.
Okay.
So we go from the Pope.
Yeah, I got you.
To...
Lay it on me.
Hooters.
What's the update? We're not doing well?
Hooters. Was that the common theme?
Oh, my. Yeah. You're kidding.
Both
you're
are dying.
Kidding.
Also not doing well.
Both are dying.
Hooters.
Stop. Wow.
I can't believe they've lasted this long. Are they really in trouble?
Yes. They are on the verge of filing for bankruptcy amid declining foot traffic.
Meaning people pick up the wings to go, but don't go in. The whole reason to go is to go in, is it not? I don't know.
Hooters could be going belly up, it says here in the New York Post. The casual dining chain is preparing for a potential bankruptcy filing as it works with creditors on a plan to restructure its operations, according to Bloomberg. The company has engaged the law firm of Ropes and Gray to assist with the process. While no final decision for seeking Chapter 11 protection has been made, a filing could take place within the next 2 months.
Why are you laughing?
Because I'm thinking about how dumb I am.
Belly?
I think I should be in charge of the bounce stories from this point forward.
The Atlanta-based company has been working alongside turnaround consultants from Accordion Partners to address their financial difficulties.
Okay. It's all about the chicken wings.
Good talk.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe some appetizers.
When we get back on the Dana and Parks program at some point today, have you... ever known a pathological liar?
Yes.
Not someone who just, you know, tells a little white lie every once in a while. Like if I say, you know, does my hair look good going gray on the sides? Yeah, you look okay. Like we're not talking about that.
You look majestic.
We're talking about big, bad whoppers for seemingly no reason or benefit.
We'll get to that and much more coming up in just a moment. News with Dan Weinbaum coming your way in 2 minutes. Here on KMBZ.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.